Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Cammy McCormick. A spokesperson for Mike Pence has indicated he'll cooperate in the investigation into efforts to overturn the 2020 election results.
Former Vice President Mike Pence is one step closer to testifying before a grand jury investigating Donald Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election. Pence's spokesperson tells CBS News the former vice president will not appeal a judge's decision compelling him to testify. The judge last month partially ruled in Pence's favor, granting him constitutional immunity from entering questions about his role on January 6, 2021. But the judge did order Pence to answer questions about Trump, striking a blow to the former president's claims of executive privilege. Rob Legere, CBS News, Washington.
A report details decades of child sexual abuse in Baltimore's archdiocese. WTOP's Kate Ryan has that.
The nearly 500-page report released by Maryland's attorney general offers sometimes agonizing detail on cases of child sexual abuse dating back 80 years and involving 600 victims, all at the hands of priests and personnel with the Archdiocese of Baltimore. Archbishop William Laurie offered an apology to survivors and said, while hard to imagine, quote, these evil acts did occur. Kate Ryan for CBS News, Washington.
House Speaker Kevin McCarthy is meeting with Taiwan's president in California, and it's angering China, as Skylar Henry reports.
It's the highest level meeting on U.S. soil for a Taiwanese leader in decades.
The friendship between the people of Taiwan and America is a matter of profound importance to the free world.
Tsai is hoping to shore up support for her democratic nation as the threat of a takeover from China grows larger.
The cleanup is underway in southeastern Missouri after a pre-dawn tornado killed at least five people. Much of the nation's midsection saw severe weather today. Former CBS News correspondent Bill Lynch has died. CBS News correspondent Steve Kathan looks back on his career.
Bill Lynch did it all.
Good morning, Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup.
He anchored the historic World News Roundup from the mid-1980s through the 1990s. In Washington, he covered the Pentagon and the State Department and politics, campaigns, and conventions.
CBS News, I'm Bill Lynch at the Kennedy Space Center.
His booming voice and punchy writing style set him apart. He read and knew so much about so many issues and so many places. Bill Lynch was an influence on me and so many others who aimed to do what he could do. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
On Wall Street today, the Dow Jones Industrials finished up 80 points. S&P futures were down. This is CBS News.
Streamline how you hire with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/...
The Shaw 101 FM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Mayer. Here's what you need to know. Judge Janet Protasiewicz will become Wisconsin's newest state Supreme Court justice after handily defeating former Justice Dan Kelly, 55-45%. A bad batch of drugs may have come into Milwaukee County after 17 suspected overdose deaths, which have been reported since Saturday. The medical examiner is still determining which substances were used by the victims, but Milwaukee County's chief health policy advisor, Dr. Ben Weston, says it's likely fentanyl was a major factor. The synthetic opioid is often mixed with street drugs, including heroin, methamphetamine, cocaine, and depressants. Anyone can stop at a Milwaukee fire station or truck and take home a Narcan Hope Kit for free. Those include Narcan, which reverses the effects of opioid overdoses, a rescue breathing pocket mask, and test strips to determine if the substance contains fentanyl. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Direct from the Dairy State, it's Extra Sharp Weekends, a three-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. Enjoy it by the slice or enjoy the whole darn block. Extra Sharp Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media Station or on the app.
This is so good.
Why are you eating so much popcorn?
Well, I'm making a difference for Wisconsin schools, and I was able to easily shop online.
I mean, it does look yummy.
OMG, you've got to try this cheddar jalapeno.
Mmm, it is good.
Oh, and I ordered a bunch of other gourmet flavors, chocolate delight, cookies and cream, and even dill pickle, delivered to my door. And I help Wisconsin schools in the process. Go to the Wisconsin Popcorn Shop at civicmedia.us/shop. That's civicmedia.us/shop. And order now. The shop closes April 10th.
Speaker Voss, I understand you don't have any children. Does that mean he's been possibly practicing
sex with
contraceptives?
What?
Or is he just less than a man? How do you go through the entire life three wives later and no chitlins?
Shooting blanks?
Perhaps.
Pull and pray.
Doubtful.
Not getting any.
Unlikely.
Unable to perform.
More likely.
Paying for it.
I hate to judge.
We don't judge here. We're the Devil's Advocate.
Listen to the Devil's Advocates live weekdays from 3 to 6 p.m.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station. Native Roots Radio is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
For the arts at 1106 Main Street, more at 30bales.com.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, and he cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
Hey, Buju Anin relatives, this is Ogama Ganua Kwe. I'm here with Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we're live on the air coming in from central Minnesota, and we welcome everybody to the show today. I usually kick off with the news here on Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and the big statement for news everywhere is that after 30 years, Winona LaDuke has stepped down or resigned her position as executive director of the environmental justice group Honor the Earth. Honor the Earth was co-founded with the Indigo Girls and Winona LaDuke 30 years ago, and she submitted her letter of resignation as the co-executive director to Honor the Earth's five board members on April 3rd, yesterday, on Monday. And the board accepted it unanimously after much discussion. Crystal Tubols began transition work with Honor the Earth last fall after formally joining the organization in 2023. As executive co-director, and she will now assume the sole leadership role at Honor the Earth while LaDuke continues to support the transition. LaDuke stepped down after a Becker County court decision in a sexual harassment case came out with a penalty for $750,000 in punitive damage. The decision was against Honor the Earth, and it was an 8-year-old sexual harassment court case that prior decisions had found that there was no wrongdoing, but the state agency had later appealed, and the person who appealed, whose name is Margaret Campbell, also known as Molly Campbell, alleged that Honor the Earth had and Winona had not properly protected her in a sexual harassment case with another employee of Honor the Earth. Honor the Earth initially had a statement on their website stating that previous cases had found no wrongdoing in the alleged harassment case, and then later reaffirmed that decision, after another appeal. But now Winona LaDuke has put out a formal post stating that she takes responsibility for that mistake. She says that she was the executive director, and it was her job to create a good foundation to heal and move forward, and that she had not been accountable to Molly Campbell. She said, "I failed Molly Campbell. She was a contract employee and the laws were not clear to me. And for that, I'm deeply sorry for the hurt caused to Ms. Campbell and for the broader harm that resulted as well." She cites that Honor the Earth was a small organization at the time and they were scarce on resources. And that was a big reason that she was unable to properly handle this case. For those of you who have been following this, you know that there's a lot more to this. And, you know, it's definitely something that is kind of being talked about all over the place. You know, there's all different kinds of opinions and information coming out about this case. Some of it is new information. Some of it is public information that many people maybe weren't aware of until this case came through. And, you know, it's one of those times of deep change and transition for many organizations. And this lawsuit shook the relationship with the NDN Collective, according to Minnesota Reformer. The NDN Collective is an Indigenous-led advocacy organization, and they contribute funds to Honor the Earth. And the organization's partnership ends in the middle of this month because they said Honor the Earth had violated its grant funding agreement by not notifying them of the litigation. NDN Collective only learned of this lawsuit after the jury's decision was reported in the news. So, I mean, there is some things that point to this being something that maybe Honor the Earth did not want people to widely know about. To kind of cover what happened with Margaret Campbell, Margaret Campbell worked for Honor the Earth from 2009 to 2015. She was initially an intern and then a paid employee who was assigned to help develop assigned to development and special projects. And in 2013, she began working with Michael Dahl, who also joined the staff from the radio station operated by the White Earth Land Recovery Project, which is also founded by Winona LaDuc. And Molly alleges that Michael Dahl made sexual remarks and other sexual gestures towards her and others, and in some instances in front of other people, and that LaDuc was dismissive of her complaints and basically wrote them off, saying that he lacked social skills and that he couldn't be held responsible for his words or actions, and even told Campbell at one point that Dahl was not dangerous. And it's Campbell says that the board members at that time were also dismissive, and an Honor the Earth board member notified Campbell that she was being placed on an unpaid administrative leave for speaking about the sexual harassment with a staff member of another organization called the Indigenous Environmental Network, which frequently collaborates with Honor the Earth. And she later received a letter from Winona LaDuc's lawyer, which claimed legal action if she did not stop defaming Honor the Earth and walk away quietly. So these things were put into the legal case that came against Honor the Earth as well. There has been a lot of work that happened with Honor the Earth in that time. Obviously, these cases have been going on for the past 8 years. So I know that the community is really fraught with emotion right now about how we continue to move forward in this work and in this community when we perhaps feel we cannot trust those that have been leading these organizations and doing so much of this work and you know, really inspiring the next generation. So, you know, I'm not even sure how I feel about that. I don't know what redemption looks like in these cases. And I certainly have mixed feelings about how all of this is going. I do think that I agree with a lot of people who are, you know, saying that it was right of Winona LaDuc to retire or to put in her resignation per se, and to issue that apology to Margaret Campbell. But 8 years is a long time for an apology. So I, you know, this is just kind of where we're at right now. And I just wanted everybody to know that we're aware of this and that, you know, to keep updated on what happens with this. So It looks like I am going to kind of wrap up here because we have our guest who's coming on today. Today we have a special interviews with Zoe Allen with Susan Allen, who's a former Minnesota State Representative, and they're both members of Sikandju Lakota and the White Earth Nation. If we're ready to roll those clips, we can go ahead and roll those clips.
Buju relatives, this segment of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Woman Sexual Assault Coalition. Hello, relatives. This is Zoe Allen. I'm Sichangu Lakota from the Rosebud Nation, as well as Anishinaabe from White Earth. And we're here today talking with my auntie, among many other things, Susan Allen. She's a lawyer. She's a former representative in the state. And she's done so many things in her life. And we're just here to talk about what some of those things are. So Susan, if you can just kind of give yourself like a bit more of an introduction, maybe talk about what exactly your job is, and also whatever else you want to do to introduce yourself.
Sure. Thank you, Zoe. Glad to be on. So I'm Zoe's auntie, and so I'm from Rosebud, and our family is, we're Lakota, Dakota, and Ojibwe as well, so from Yankton and from White Earth, so on both sides of the family. And so I grew up mostly we started out in South Dakota. My brother was born, Joey's dad was born in Eagle Butte, and I was actually born on the Ute Reservation in Utah. My sister was born in Iowa, Sioux City, and then my son was born on the Navajo Reservation. And so
hey, everybody. We'll be right back with Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. There's a little bit of a teaser today with the interview with Susan Allen, former representative of the state of Minnesota. Stay tuned.
We are the Alusa Nation.
Unwanted sexting or photos, inappropriate jokes, even tickling or wrestling can feel like a violation. Catcalling, cornering, or groping, getting them drunk or high for sex. Recording sexual acts without permission. Hurting someone because of their sexual orientation. Ripping a family member, a child, a date, a friend, a stranger. Purchasing a human being for sex. You make the choice every single time. Sexual violence is many things. Make a choice. Do not do it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
The Loons are marching in to a new season. Join us Saturday, April 15th at 7:30 p.m. as your Loons take on Orlando City SC. Get your tickets today at mnufc.com.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake. I'm Oga Maganiwakwe, and today we have a special interview with Zoe Allen and Susan Allen, who's the former Minnesota State Representative. They're both from the Sichanju Lakota Nation and the White Earth Nation here in Minnesota. We'll step right back into that interview again with Zoe Allen and Susan Allen. Welcome back.
So we moved around a lot because of my father's job, and basically, I started a little later in life going to school. So I had my son when I was just turning 20, I believe. And so I waited a little while, and I went to Minneapolis Community College. Back then it was MCT. And that was a good place to start because I think some of us are what I would call educationally disadvantaged, in the sense that I stopped going to school, I think, in high school. So I didn't complete high school, so I got a GED. And so MCT was a great place to start and get caught up. And so that's what I did for 2 years. And then I went to Augsburg, and Augsburg has some great programs for Native students. Back then, there were probably about just a handful of us. But Bremer and Cargill pretty much gave us a full ride to go there.
Nice.
And so I studied economics there and math, and then that helped me get into law school. I think because if you can demonstrate that you can handle difficult courses. So I think that it's sort of you have to sort of plan early about getting into law school.
Right. And what kind of originally set you on the track to become a lawyer? You said you studied econ. I didn't even know. I'm sure you told me before, but I forgot you studied econ. How did that lead to, doing the type of law you practice now? And also, could you kind of describe what kind of law you practice?
Mm-hmm. Well, getting into law school, not is difficult, but not impossible. Not a traditional route. So the LSAT, which I think they're trying to get rid of, which is pretty much biased. And so I didn't put too much emphasis on that. What I did was there was a program at University of New Mexico that the BIA funds. It's the Pre-Law Summer Institute. And so it can be a place where it mimics the first 8 weeks of law school. So if you do well in that program, you can get recruited from that program. Or like in my case, I applied to the University of New Mexico Law School, and it was conditional on me. Acceptance was conditional on me doing well in that program. So I did well in the program and got in. So that was how I got into law school. And then, I always think that I won the lottery. I mean, it's like there's so many. How do you stand out in law school when you're interviewing for your first job? And and so I say I won the lottery because I got into a firm, a law firm, and then on a partner shareholder track. And so those opportunities are hard to get, those positions. And so I think one thing I did in law school was study areas of law that would be useful for tribes, for representing tribes. Mm-hmm. So I studied a lot of tax law, and then wrote a memo regarding a sort of unique tax issue for tribes. And so that was caught the attention of the partners in the firm that I applied to, and so I was invited to join, and it took a little while. I did not pass the bar the first time. And so it was, oftentimes with like the bar prep and is expensive and you still have to work. And so I didn't have the time that I needed to spend on it. So I had to make time for that with help from like family. And so got through that and got licensed, and that's sort of the path there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what initially sparked your interest in law? I mean, we don't have not to my knowledge. Do we have any other lawyers in the family? Like,
no, or... but we did have. So my father, your grandfather, was an Episcopal priest in from Pine Ridge, and his mentor was Vine Deloria Sr., who was an Episcopal priest, and his son obviously is Vine Deloria Jr. So we were. He would often come to the house and visit, and so your brother and I would sit and listen. And so I was exposed to the development, early development of Indian law as an adolescent. And so, and then I read a lot, and my dad had a library, and he had all the books from Vine Deloria, and one of them was Custer Died for Your Sins. And so that was, and then at that time, AIM was developing, and Russell Means is our cousin, and he, because his mother was a, watched us when we were kids, when my parents would travel with Theo, and so I saw that change. They were like white collar, like educated California Indians, and then they started growing the hair long and red shirts and vests and started going to powwows. And so it was the first time really becoming, overcoming that sort of stigma and that shame of like being an Indian and being proud and learning about the culture and participating in community events and then activism and the, everything that AIM stood for. And then what Vine Deloria and my father were doing with the trying to, you know, going to Congress and getting, you know, with the development of Indian law. And back then there were probably just, you know, not that many Indian attorneys. So they sort of pretty much laid the groundwork. So that's how I got interested. And I just, from that point on, I wanted to be an attorney. It just made sense. And my mom said I argued all the time. So that made perfect sense to her. So,
That's funny. That's hilarious. That's also kind of why I was thinking about it too. Still in the back of my mind, not quite sure, but yeah, always been a debater. We both are in the family. But you know, you taught me, I think one of the most important things you taught me is to make sure you know what you're talking about, to back up your claims as a lawyer should. Yeah, so I guess, I mean, just for my personal interest, what were the Delorias like, or what was Vine Deloria Jr. like, and how did, like, what kind of conversations did you overhear growing up, or were there things that were discussed in, you know, your household that really kind of ignited a fire in you to do this type of work? And we have about like a minute or 2 minutes.
Would you be the concept of self-determination? Mm. To self-determination. So at the time, you know, Nixon was president, and he passed the Indian Self-Determination and Education Act, and so money was set aside for Indian students to go to school, and so I think that the self-determination and being able to articulate what sovereignty means for tribes, and being able to protect your cultural identity and cultural artifacts, and to be able to have a government, to be self-governing. And so those were the concepts that that I remember being talked about. And then I also remember just the goofiness of they were great storytellers. And would often, especially their father, Vine Deloria Sr., would often, people would gather from all over just to hear his stories, which were just hilarious. And so that's what I remember.
Wonderful. Well, great. So we'll be right back after a short break, talking more with Susan Allen, who's a lawyer and also a former representative in the state, Minnesota State Legislature. So stay with us.
Roll up your sleeves and enjoy some refreshments. On Friday, April 7th, the Indigenous Roots Cultural Center will offer free coffee and tea to anyone who gets a COVID vaccine between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. You'll also receive a $50 gift card. The event is open to the public, and while walk-ins are welcome, early registration is encouraged at interfaithaction.org. So protect yourself by getting vaccinated while enjoying some free coffee and tea. That's Friday, April 7th at the Indigenous Roots Cultural Center in St. Paul.
Hey, it's Tom. Since 2009, All Energy Solar has been providing solar energy solutions to customers. With fully licensed electricians and installers, you can be sure that your solar installation will go smoothly. The team at All Energy Solar understands that every customer is unique. They'll take the time to survey and understand your property to find a solar solution that works for you. One of the biggest advantages of going solar is the opportunity to take advantage of the many solar incentives available. But it can often be confusing to know what you're qualified for. All Energy Solar professionals will help you find out what savings you can apply for and even help with your applications. This is especially important since many rebate programs have limited capacity and are first come, first serve. So it's important to have a professional on your side who will make sure you get every eligible rebate. Get a free no obligation assessment from All Energy Solar's commercial solar specialists by calling 800-620-3370.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
CBS News Brief. A spokesperson for former Vice President Mike Pence says he will not appeal a judge's order that he testify in the Justice Department's investigation of efforts to overturn the 2020 election results. Legal analyst Laurie Levinson.
We don't know exactly what Pence will say in the grand jury, but what we do know is that the special prosecutor is getting closer and closer to those who were in former President Trump's inner circle.
He would be the highest profile witness to date. WJZ-TV's Denise Koch reports on a new report on sex abuse involving Baltimore's archdiocese over the past 80 years.
Investigators say over 600 children are known to be victims by the 156 people named in the report, mostly clergy and church staff. But the number of victims is likely much higher.
CBS News Brief, I'm Cammie McCormick.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUKradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Dan Kelly is going down swinging even after losing the Wisconsin Supreme Court race by a wide margin. In an unusual concession speech, he called Janet Protasiewicz a serial liar.
I wish that in a circumstance like this, I would be able to concede to a worthy opponent. But I do not have a worthy opponent to which I can concede.
Wisconsin's high court will have a liberal majority for the first time in 15 years. The mayors of Madison, Green Bay, and Racine all won re-election. Voters in Mount Pleasant re-elected all of their village board members in what amounted to a referendum on embattled manufacturer Foxconn. In sports, the Bucks beat Washington last night. The Brewers and Mets play today. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
This is so good.
Why are you eating so much popcorn?
Well, I'm making a difference for Wisconsin schools, and I was able to easily shop online.
I mean, it does look yummy.
OMG, you've got to try this cheddar jalapeno.
Mmm, it is good.
Oh, and I ordered a bunch of other gourmet flavors, chocolate delight, cookies and cream, and even dill pickle, delivered to my door. And I help Wisconsin schools in the process. Go to the Wisconsin Popcorn Shop at civicmedia.us/shop. That's civicmedia.us/shop. And order now. The shop closes April 10th.
Every family has one. The Smother.
Holy why!
Hi, Erica!
This is my daughter. I baked her in my tummy.
The Goldbergs every weeknight.
Weeknights at 5 and 5:30 on My24.
With a house full of women, it's every man for himself.
What is it about hanging bras in the bathroom like Christmas ornaments? If I don't hang my underwear in the bathroom, that would be terrifying.
Tim Allen is the last man standing.
Weeknights at 6 and 6:30 on My24.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
Sharing some stories about that. And now I kind of thought, Susan, that we'd talk about, I mean, you've done so much in your career as a lawyer, but then in, what was it? Was it 2009 that you became? When was, what year was that you became?
It was a special election, 2011
that you became a state representative in the House. How did that start? Honestly, this will be news to me. I feel like I've never really asked you like how that all came to be, because you've been practicing tribal tax law for I don't know how many years prior to that. But how did you go from that position to, you know, wanting to become a politician?
Mm-hmm. Well, I never stopped being a practicing attorney. So, you can still, you know, you don't have to give up your employment or to serve as in the House or as a politician. So, I think it was a surprise. It was not something that I really planned on or was really that interested in. I don't think I've ever even been to the Capitol. And so, Karen Clark and Sharon Day were aware that there was going to be an opening because Senator Berglund was retiring. So then Jeff Hayden was going to run for the Senate seat. And so that the House seat would open up. And I was living in Powderhorn where Jeff Hayden lived in the central neighborhood. And so I was within the district. And so they were thinking like who could run. And so Sharon Day and Karen asked me, because I had served on a board with them. So I knew them, they knew me. And so they asked if I would consider running. So and that's usually how, especially women, I think that usually how it happens is somebody identifies them and then people ask them. And so then it just sort of started, you know, just everyone from Peggy Flanagan to Robert Lilligren and Karen Clark and working on my campaign committee. And so teaching me the ropes. And I went to Camp Wildstone, and Peggy Flanagan was actually the coach or the teacher for certain parts of the camp. And so I learned a lot from them and just pretty much did what they told me to do. And where to stand and what to say. And so I had to learn a whole different language. It was just, you know, I was always aware, read a lot and was engaged. And but when you go to the Capitol and you're a DFL, Democratic Farmer Labor Party person, there's a language. And so the issues, how people talk about the issues. And so it was kind of a crash course. And I think people were surprised that I got like, but because it was the first Indian woman to be elected, and there weren't that many people of color in the legislature. It was probably about 98% white when I joined in 2011, and so I think looking back, I never stopped being an attorney, so I wasn't that great of a rep because it just, but what really I think made a difference was that people saw that somebody that was from a different background and wasn't a polished politician could actually win. And it really wasn't about, you know, the money or the background. It was about, you know, just somebody who was engaged and who had a sense of fighting for, in our district, it was about fighting for social and economic justice. And that's something we have in us growing up, because we're fighters. We had to be to survive. So it was something that came naturally to me. But I think what it accomplished was that people saw that if I could win, they could. And so so I was happy to serve for three terms. And a lot of the stuff that we worked on, issues like banning conversion therapy and restoring felony voting and expungement and driver's licenses, all those we were working on back then. So, you know, change is slow, and all that's the current with the DFL having control of all three houses, or the two houses and the executive branch, that those things are finally getting passed into law. So I'm very happy about to see that come about after so many people have been working, just they never stopped working on it, on those issues. So, and you know, it took like a decade for that work to pay off. So.
Right. And also, you know, along with being like what you said, the first Native American woman to be elected into the House, right? Minnesota. You're also the first openly gay Native woman. And so I'm really curious to hear about how that also shaped things for you. And I just remember you getting sworn in under Abraham Lincoln in the Capitol, and that was just the craziest thing to see, is this huge, like, you know, portrait of him. And for our listeners that may not know, you know, Abraham Lincoln called for the execution of 40 Dakota men. And it was a lot larger before that, actually. I think it was supposed to be like 200, but it came down to 40. And that was, oh gosh, I don't have the year, but that was in Mankato, Minnesota, after the Dakota War. So it was such a beautiful thing as your niece to be there to see you step into that role. But yeah, I'm curious, because it was, 2011. Like, what did that look like for you as also like a gay woman?
I can talk a little bit about that. And also just mention that I think it was the swearing in, it was the first time that people could recall that a drum was brought into the chambers of the House. And so we had a youth drum group. I think there's a YouTube video on it. And also the symbolism of the that weird Dakota also, and that Governor Ramsey, whose picture is in the hall, issued an exclusion order for our people. And we actually had relatives that were around Perry Island that were incarcerated and moved to Nebraska and to South Dakota and ended up in Yankton. So all of that was to be able to, I think what Sharon Dake described it best, and she said that at the end of my term, she said, thank you for bringing all of us with you there. And so I think it was something, you know, having a presence for Indian people and tribal people in the state to feel like they were there and that it was a place that they were welcome and it was their house as well. And so so that was, it was very, very moving time, ceremony and time. So as far as being gay out and always been out and I think it's just, for me, it's been easier that way. And also, I did it, I think, same thing, like running, that people could see that you could do it. I also am out because I want it to be something safe for people to do. And I have the privilege where in my position and that it is safe for me, but it's not safe for everyone. And so, So it was important for me to be out so that others can, you know, safely at some point what we're all working for, and especially transgender. So I think going to the legislature, I think sort of, you know, shatters sort of people's stereotypes of LGBTQ people, and that. Because it's so easy for them to say that they're to categorize us as others and they don't have to deal with us. But when you're right there in the same space that they are, then they have to deal with you on, a civil way and on terms that are important. I think that makes a difference. So when you join a place where you've been excluded, you change that place forever. So I think that's important. Right now, it's amazing because there's 12 members of the LGBTQ caucus at the legislature right now, and this just happened in less than 10 years. And there's another Native woman, Representative Keeler from Moorhead area, who's in the House, and Jamie Becker Finn. And then we have Senator Kunish, who's the first American Indian woman, or first Indian woman to be in this as a state senator. So it's still, they're the true ones that are really skilled in, learning that way of a politician and gaining influence. So I'm really happy that they're there and that they took this, that they've made this commitment to serve long term. And so we can all be thankful for that.
Right. And I was just trying to get the name right, too, of Alicia Kolozinski. They are Two-Spirit, or they identify as Two-Spirit, and they're from Duluth. So they're in the Minnesota House now, too. I think it's really important to just acknowledge the fact that, yes, like while you say, like Heather Keeler and, Kunish, they're the ones that are, like, really getting down to like writing bills and are really out there fighting for us, but you open the door to make that happen. There always has to be a first, there always has to be the person that's willing to bear all of that, because I'd be interested to hear. We have about a minute left and we can talk about it in the next segment too, but was there pushback, or did you receive any kind of discriminatory opinions from people, or was it just so much support that you weren't, you didn't really pay attention to that?
Well, I think initially when I was running, people were concerned because they say, well, that's fine. She'll do great things for any people, but what's she going to do for us? Mm-hmm. And so I think, but then not realizing that, that we live in our communities, so I lived in Powderhorn and it fit within my values to say it was an LGBT community, and it was also fairly diverse, and it was so I was a part of that community and participated as an Indian person, and so it so it was just sort of people had to sort of wait and see that would I represent their interests as well. So that's the balance, because we're I think we come from districts where they're very progressive. So we're allowed, we can any sort of, for any people, it's about economic and justice. And so that is something, it fits within their values, so they have no issue with it. But at the same time, you have an average House member has 35,000 constituents. So you can imagine what different needs that you have to be responsive to. And so I think, after a while, people realize that that you can be more than one thing.
Right. Definitely duality is really important. Lee Gwich, we're going to be right back here with Susan Allen after a short break. So please stay with us.
Hey, Olgama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Your Blue Line Extension Project wants to hear from you. We are working on extending the Blue Line Light Rail into North Minneapolis, Robbinsdale, Crystal, and Brooklyn Park, and connecting it to our growing transit system. Tell us about your neighborhood, your business, your family, and what you need from your Blue Line. Learn more and share more of your story at yourblueline.org. That's yourblueline.org.
Roll up your sleeves and enjoy some refreshments. On Friday, April 7th, the Indigenous Roots Cultural Center will offer free coffee and tea to anyone who gets a COVID vaccine between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. You'll also receive a $50 gift card. The event is open to the public, and while walk-ins are welcome, early registration is encouraged at interfaithaction.org. So protect yourself by getting vaccinated while enjoying some free coffee and tea. That's Friday, April 7th at the Indigenous Roots Cultural Center in St. Paul.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are a Lusa Nation.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake. I'm Oga Muganuakwe, and we're here with our final segment of an interview with Zoe Allen and former Minnesota State Representative Susan Allen, who was the first Native woman in the Minnesota House of Representatives. Here we go.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Oh!
So we're here with my aunt Susan Allen. This is Zoe Allen. She is a lawyer. She's also been a state representative in the Minnesota House. And before the break, we were just talking a little bit about what that experience was like, and how much has changed since she was elected into office in 2011. So, Susan, you were mentioning, I think, I don't want to get the number wrong, did you say 12 members of the LGBTQ caucus now?
Yeah, I believe it's like 11 or 12, right?
Okay. Yeah. And one of them is does identify as Two-Spirit. And so I'd love to talk to you about that. But before we get into that, what were some of the issues that were really important for you during your term, and what are some of the things that you follow now that may be happening in the House or just at the state level?
Well, at the time I was there, it was in 2012, it was similar to now. We had the majority in the House, the Senate, and then the governor obviously was Democratic or DFL. And so we were able to pass significant legislation. And the one thing that we passed was the marriage equality. So I was one of the lucky ones to be able to vote for marriage equality. And so the issues, you know, as an Indian person, a lot of resistance comes from, you know, being the pressure to be assimilated. And so making sure that that we have in policies that the legislature adopts or laws that are passed, that different groups are recognized, so that the way you administer services, mental health services, health services, transportation, judicial system, that it recognizes that there are issues that are specific to certain populations. So certain communities of color, LGBT, and also those with disabilities, and so those are the things that I focused on was trying to be inclusive so that those groups were considered in all policies. And I think at the time you saw that there was a commitment to do that as far as from the governor and the commissioners of the different agencies to be more inclusive and to start to hire people that reflected those communities and to study those issues. So I think that those are the things I worked on, just, you know, day-to-day stuff, like just making bringing about awareness to those issues. And then, you know, with assimilation, it was like marriage was not something like, it wasn't marriage. We, you know, we don't have any as LGBT. We weren't able to participate in it. And it kind of had been sort of become this heterosexual thing that it's like, okay, so do I really want to have marriage equality? And my answer was like, no, not really. I mean, I don't really want to like have the, you know, I'd have to figure out a way to have, develop new, you know, customs or like, how, what does that look for me? And, but then at the end of the day, you know, it's like we needed marriage equality because people's rights were being denied.
Yeah. Right.
And so, you know, for housing and for hospital visits and for the respect and recognition of a union. So it was, you know, important to vote for that and realize that, you know, we don't have to give up our, you know, we shouldn't have to give up who we are to participate in civilized society. I mean, to be accepted, we shouldn't have to conform in order to be given equal rights. And so I was comfortable with that. And so I was able to vote on that. And so being two-spirit was something that, you know, I just talked about some, and it's a really more complex, nuanced discussion that it's hard to have at the legislature, because you know, for Indian people in our history, it wasn't about LGBT, it wasn't about sexual orientation, it was about gender and gender freedom. And so that when a person, a child expressed male or female qualities, that wasn't suppressed. And so that, you know, so that it was encouraged for that child to be able to express their gender. And so if a child wanted to express a more female gender and then marry a man, they weren't considered gay necessarily. They were, it was considered just accepted because they were acting according to their gender. And so it wasn't about sexual orientation. So I like the term two-spirit because it recognizes that we're all sort of on a spectrum, and that we, you know, both men and women would benefit from being able to understand and listen to people's perspectives that are maybe male or female perspectives, and also ways of being, and so how do you affirm, you know, that in young boys and girls and those that are gender nonconforming, to be able to support them. And it's not about, you know, surgery, it's not about drugs. I mean, all those things have their place, but it's just really about just affirming who people are and accepting, you know, how they want to express themselves without judgment or, you know, shame or so that those are the kind of, that's why I like the two-spirit talk about that framework rather than about sexual orientation, because who cares about, you know, sexual orientation is private. It's but gender is something that we all, you know, it's very much who we are.
Right. I can't remember who said it. Oh, it might have been Judith Butler, but gender is social, you know, gender is something we use to engage with other people. And it also sets rules for us in society, unfortunately, dependent on what gender we are. And I've been trying to explain to other relatives of mine just what the social construct of gender is, because just that statement in itself is sometimes really hard for people to wrap their brains around, because we're not used to talking that way, especially as Native people. And people look at me and like, what do you mean? Like, say what you mean. And I was just thinking about how two-spirit people also had, it's a spiritual role too in traditional communities, and that two-spirit people were able to go into families that had lost a loved one and take on that role so that that family could grieve and do what they needed to do to honor their loved one. And then that two-spirit relative would take on, could take on whatever role because they're two-spirit, and the gendered rules were different for them. And I just think that you speak to a really important point in just saying that it's about how we express ourselves, and it's about how we identify as Indigenous people, and not so much about our sexuality, because it kind of seems like in today's world, and it's totally warranted, it just kind of all gets lumped into the same category.
This is so good.
Why are you eating so much popcorn?
Well, I'm making a difference for Wisconsin schools, and I was able to easily shop online.
I mean, it does look yummy.
OMG, you've got to try this cheddar jalapeno.
Mmm, it is good.
Oh, and I ordered a bunch of other gourmet flavors, chocolate delight, cookies and cream, and even dill pickle, delivered to my door. And I help Wisconsin schools in the process. Go to the Wisconsin Popcorn Shop at civicmedia.us/shop. That's civicmedia.us/shop. And order now. The shop closes April 10th.
Milwaukee. You have to check out Mobcraft Beer, the world's first crowdsourced brewery where they turn your ideas into beer. Stop in their downtown taproom to try flagships, seasonals, limited release crowdsourced brews that you won't find anywhere else, and more. Mobcraft also has a pizza kitchen making craft pies with the freshest ingredients. And enjoy their amazing taproom, featuring over 20 constantly rotating draft lines, indoor and outdoor seating on their dog-friendly patio, and a killer view of the Milwaukee skyline. Mobcraft Beer, located in the heart of Walker's Point in Milwaukee. For more info, head to mobcraftbeer.com.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.